are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, March 1st, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, joining us from TYT, Emma Vigeland will be in studio talking about the week that was. Then Andy Kindler via the telephone will give us the latest update on the blockbuster tour by Dennis Miller and Mark Stein making its way across the country. Meanwhile, Donald Trump gave his son-in-law top security clearance for Hanukkah. I shouldn't have said that. BB facing an indictment. Fraud and bribery and betrayal of trust.
I hope his delicate mental condition can take it.
Yes. Meanwhile, breaking. Turns out Donald Trump, incredibly petty, and his kids, huge liars. Jeff Merkley seeks to prevent the U.S. military intervention in Venezuela. And Felix Sater and Alan Weisselberg. Next up for the House Intel Committee. Worse than Pruitt, former coal lobbyist Andrew Wheeler confirmed by the Senate to head the EPA. And ladies and gentlemen, Sheldon Adelson in dire health on his deathbed. Looks to set up a foundation to do horrible things after he dies.
So unlike him.
Meanwhile, Democrats will reintroduce a DREAM Act and temporary protective status protections. And Bernie, about to have his first rally of the 2020 campaign tomorrow in Brooklyn as Jay Inslee enters the race.
I'll be there. Watch TYT's coverage.
Well, there'll be a lot of us there. We'll talk about that in a moment. And Pelosi calls for Democratic unity, and AOC provides the muscle. All this and more on today's program. Apparently, Emma is going to the rally tomorrow. I think the entire office is in one form or another going to the rally. Are you going to the rally, Michael?
Of course.
Emma, you're obviously going and covering for TYT. Are you going to be live?
Yeah, we'll be live. We'll be streaming the rally live on Rebel HQ, which is my channel, and then hopefully I'll get a word in with the man himself.
There you go. And will you be doing like commentary on the rally?
Probably not. I mean, I think I'm going to interview supporters because I did that with Trump supporters, as some people know. And it would be nice to talk to some sane people for a change.
I would be curious as to what the difference is when you talk to a Trump supporter. Like, I mean, did you ever hit a streak of like, I've talked to 10 normal Trump supporters in a row?
No. I mean,
it's, two?
There were a few, yeah. And they were semi-normal. I think a lot of my approach was being extremely non-confrontational, so they felt comfortable saying the outrageous things that they did end up saying, and it was a successful, you know, few months where I was going once a week to cover these rallies because I was just looked like some kind of, I kind of look like a Fox News correspondent, right? Like I could fit in there.
You could.
And when I was just being neutral and non-confrontational, they would just open up more. But I think at the Bernie rallies, we can have a little bit more fun.
Yeah, that's true. And now, so what did you do for self-care after spending that much time with Trump?
What am I going to do for self-care after hearing you use that phrase?
Pro tip.
Exactly. There you go. Yeah.
No, I mean, I guess I just, I like wine.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
So wine. That was wine. What I was asking, whether it was hard liquor or wine. Brendan, Matt, are you guys going?
I think so.
Yes.
Okay.
It looks like
I'm feeling a bit under the weather, but
all right.
It's Bernie, so.
Right. And
it's supposed to rain, so.
Oh, is it really?
Oh, it's decision. Raining? I will not be there.
Oh, yeah.
It's like spirit. 33 yeah. And raining. It's just ooh. Right on the cusp of being snowing.
Hey, look, gosh. Bernie's awesome. I'll be.
My daughter is not going to be excited about
it. I don't know
this.
If it's indoors. I don't think so.
Whatever.
It's at Brooklyn College. I just don't know what the venue is.
Yeah, I'm not sure either at this point. And we should say, Jamie is out of town, but I would imagine she would have gone. I think she's now with the Zapatistas, right? Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
All right. Well, let's start with this. I just want to remind you folks, this program relies on the support from its members. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Before we get into some of the bigger stories of the week, this is just too good. The as you know, AOC introduced the Green New Deal with Ed Markey now a couple of weeks ago, and it is it has been the focal point, I think, of the of CPAC, which is the conservative. I don't even know what the name of it is now.
Political.
Action conference?
It should be action committee, but it's just not.
It's
that's what you would
just
think it is
some conference with conservatives that
but
we
it's
have
not
been,
a PAC. Even
it's
though,
not a PAC,
which
it's,
is absurd.
It's just
Nazi
a conference.
Woodstock.
And but the thing is, it's gotten more boring as the years have gone on. In part because it's no longer shocking. And I will say this. You know, we may cover a couple of clips from it that are interesting, but I used to cover CPAC quite a bit on this show and even on the radio program, you know, over a decade ago. And it was always like, oh, well, we get some pushback. Why are you just covering the freaks? And now they're boring because the president of the United States basically is a half a step ahead of these people.
Diamond and Silk opened. The CPAC and got a standing ovation.
There you go.
I mean, like that's not even a joke.
No, it's. I mean, look, it's been just as bad in the past, except for just like Diamond and. Of course they did. Of course they did. They've been brought in to testify in front of Congress by Republicans on, you know, deplatforming.
They're bringing back hip hop in their performance. I mean, did you hear that song they wrote about Cory Booker?
Oh no!
It sounds like one I might actually like.
It was about eating meat. One of them beatboxed.
Oh, because he's a vegetarian.
He's a vegan, which
oh,
is
so cool.
Very triggering for them. And they performed this number on their Fox streaming show. And it's,
Cory Booker does have like vegan.
You
brain,
guys
though.
Really got to see it.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned vegan and it being triggering because on Fox and Friends, the FNF viewers weigh in on the Green New Deal. They have assembled a crew of Fox and Friends viewers to comment on the Green New Deal. And who is this host? I don't know who she is.
Ainsley. It's Ainsley Earhart.
Oh, Ainsley Earhart. Okay. I just have never seen her not, you know, like up and walking around.
Seated between right. Ducey and Kilmeade.
There's never been a not a-hole named Ainsley.
I would imagine that Ainsley in the proportion of Ainsley and a-holes is pretty, pretty
also,
one-to-one.
Trip and Ainsley.
All right. But here she is. And sure. For the life of me, we have gone over this tape multiple times. Cannot figure it out.
Gary, our farmer friend, I see you shaking your head. What are you thinking about, Gary?
Many environmentalists.
Pause
and
it for
OAC.
1 second. Now, understand that there are two types of farmers. There's one that realize like, hey, climate change is going to fundamentally threaten what I do because I can't move my property. I can't move my land And there is already, if you know anything about growing zones in this country, in New York, we live, New York State, largely a five, the growing zone five. In just the past 15 years, we have like slid into like a 5.5 growing zone in this this region. So if you're a farmer, you're a little bit concerned because of what this means for your future ability to raise crops. Or on the other hand, you're just upset because the EPA doesn't allow you to use basically Agent Orange.
Many environmentalists, and OAC being one of them, do not realize that America is covered in grass.
Pause it for 1 second. Incidentally, OAC is not a thing.
I like how he's dressed like he's going to a Mad Men cosplay convention. Exactly. Why is he so dressed up?
Yeah, he went to the Banana Republic Mad Men sale.
OAC. I think he meant AOC, but go ahead.
OAC being one of them, do not realize that America is covered in grass. And 75% of a cow or a beef animal's body weight is made up of grass, which we cannot eat. So we would be eliminating a livelihood of a huge portion of America, or United States anyway, in their production of beef.
All right. Thank you all for your comment.
They were so excited to talk to the farmer, and he made absolutely no sense. First off, I would also refute the idea of that he has a full understanding of what constitutes a cow in the context of the American meat market, because the one of the biggest problems is that a huge percentage of our cows don't eat grass as their primary feed. Right.
That's why there's grass fed.
Exactly. That's why grass fed is such a unique product, because
you
the vast
to ding this guy for not reading Michael Pollan.
Well, I mean, he's a farmer. Yeah. And he obviously is not aware that the vast amount of so-called farming when it comes to livestock in this country is are corn-fed.
Everything about Fox News is elder abuse on some level.
It's unbelievable.
They terrify them. And then
but
they have
what's
them
his
on.
Argument? That there's so much grass that without the cows to eat the grass?
What are we going to do, not make that grass turn into cows?
That will make a lot of cows unemployed. It will...
I leave
them redundant.
It was incomprehensible.
Totally incomprehensible, but sort of funny. All right. Well, let's turn to the hearings this week. Emma, I'm curious from your perspective, what was the out of all the things that came out of that hearing, what were your top two or three takeaways?
I mean, Michael Cohen came off very credible. More credibly, is that a word? More credibly than I would have initially thought. The more fun revelation, and I guess we kind of knew this, but I really love the story about Trump getting that bidder to buy his self-portrait for the highest amount of money and then buy it back with charity money and then hang it up in his golf course. It's like the most Trump story I've ever heard in my life, and it's got to be a crime. People donate to the Trump Foundation. They don't do it. Well, I guess his like bylaws must be just completely lax.
There's no doubt that you are not that is some violation of a statute in terms of a taxation statute.
But the painting will inspire the kids that go to the golf course.
That'll be a bit of a stretch.
It will help them think positive for their tests.
But yeah, that sounds like
such a narrow
one of the criminal violations we heard during the hearing. Here is a moment that I think was perhaps the most relevant in terms of what happens with Trump. The hearing was largely devoid of discussion of conspiracy to defraud the United States, right? And the underlying crime for what collusion is, largely. I mean, there was some of it. It talked about it in terms of Stone calling in, supposedly knowing about WikiLeaks. I also am not convinced that the story about Trump not wanting to win didn't in some way make the idea of Trump in some fashion colluding with anybody, because he didn't think he was going to become president. Right. This was just a business deal for him.
Right, which is why I think the, you know, this line of questioning, as well as Ocasio-Cortez's, was more fruitful because it focuses on the taxation elements, which are really where the meat and potatoes of the whole investigation, I believe,
right.
will be.
Exactly. And this is Representative Raja Krishnamurthy. And he, this brief exchange is, I think, on some level, the most relevant. It's only 16 seconds, but here's the question. Here's the answer.
Is there any other wrongdoing or illegal act that you are aware of regarding Donald Trump that we haven't yet discussed today?
Yes. And again, those are part of the investigation that's currently being looked at by the Southern District of New York.
So we know Michael Cohen is working with the Southern District of New York to on at least multiple other cases that of criminal activity by the president. It's almost as if, and I can understand the strategic reasons and the tactical reasons, and maybe there is stuff there in terms of Russia, but it's almost as if in setting the bar about Donald Trump that he was some type of Manchurian candidate and there was some type of like massive undercutting of our national security. And all that may be true. But focusing exclusively on that, we just heard about enough crimes in that hearing the other day that they would have impeached like every other president. Bill Clinton was impeached because he lied in a deposition about having sex with somebody.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I think some progressives have been saying for a while, is the over-focus on the Russia stuff to the exclusion of or to the detriment of his tax crimes is a political mistake. I think that it seems to them, because they're in the Washington, D.C. bubble, that, you know, the foreign policy apparatus, the national security apparatus, and undermining that is a far bigger crime than financial ones, which they see on a day-to-day basis. But those are more easily provable. This guy is not smart enough to cover his tracks. And I think that that's what we're going to see. Also, Mueller is clearly limiting his scope to collusion and being conservative in that way. So I don't know if he's going to come back with any smoking gun about collusion, like what you're saying. And that you know, Republicans may rejoice, but then we have the Southern District chipping away at those other crimes.
Yeah. And I think that's totally true. And I also think that these broader sets of crimes and broader atmosphere of corruption is the type of stuff that he's a egregious and incompetent and extreme example of, because that's who he is. But it reflects systems problems. And that's another difference in approaches here inside the Democratic Party.
The only thing that I would say that that would be, I think, a legitimate response to that critique of the overemphasis on the, is that in 3 months from now, we're going to have two or three or four examples of what we just saw with Michael Cohen. We're going to see Felix Sater up there. We're going to see Weisselberg, who was the CFO for Trump Inc. We may see others. We couldn't see this prior to now because Republicans were not going to have hearings like this. They simply were not going to bring people up. And you wouldn't. And part of the reason why I think, you know, Michael Cohen probably lied the first time around was because he thought he could get away with it. He just thought, he thought like, oh, as Donald Trump, the reason why Donald Trump signs these checks and, you know, breaks the law like this is because he thinks he's going to get away with it.
I want to see what Felix Sater, I'm eager to hear that, because that's the only thread of this Russia thing that I find particularly interesting. And I think we've always said, literally from day one, mafia money laundering stuff. And the conduit, and also the nexus, like if there even is like a tangential connection or a direct connection to intelligence services, it's all going to be at the nexus of Felix Sater. And that will be interesting. And also, again, I don't know like if the broader proposition like that Mark Blythe told me of like there's no restrictions on campaign funding basically at all. There's lobbying groups for every foreign interest with money you can imagine in D.C., again, this is a reflection of a systems problem.
And I just also think the for me, the most interesting element is Moscow Trump Tower.
Definitely.
That's, I think, where all of this lies. Trump isn't colluding to win the election.
That's motive.
Right.
Right. The motive is he wants to make a couple hundred million dollars, and he will promise the Russians anything. If he just doesn't think he's going to be president, he's not going to have to fulfill those promises.
And people have been reporting that he really didn't plan to be president for a while. I don't know if you guys read Devil's Bargain, but that was a great book.
Yeah, and Devil's Bargain is a good book.
Yeah, and that it's been clear that this was a marketing campaign. It's always about him, his image, his brand, the dollars in his bank account at the end of the day.
And so there's really no difference in my view of like the Russia deal versus whatever it is he did in the Bronx to get that stupid golf course going.
Which is
all the same.
What AOC brought up.
It's all the same way of operating.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And I think there were moments, and I would have to go back through the testimony, but there were moments where I felt like that Cohen was still holding stuff back.
But he might be because he's cooperating with the Southern District.
There were times when those moments happened, he acknowledged that he couldn't talk about it. But there were still times, one or two times, where I thought he's still not. There's some stuff that I think he thinks will never come out, and I'm not convinced. Too many cross currents to expect all of this to come out. I have a feeling that there's just some stuff that may implicate just too many people on some level. But the other thing that came out of this was that the Republicans are really, really bad at this. Like they're so out of practice that they got used to yelling into an echo chamber over Benghazi. Yeah. They have spent the past 2 years knowing that these were all sham hearings, that they never had to in any way ever, you know, sort of like deliver anything. And they're just out of practice. They're not good at this and they're not bright.
But it's also righteous indignation is so it doesn't ring true when you have all of these indictments lined up behind Donald Trump. And the fact that they were just up in arms consistently throughout the hours and hours of testimony, and they kept deferring to Jim Jordan and yielding their time to him as if that would be effective. I mean, both of these red face a-holes, Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows, were not effective communicators, and yet they seem to be the ones leading the charge the entire time.
Well, who are you going to do it? You can have Higgins do it?
Yeah.
I mean,
Higgins is better.
There was one or two guys who I thought were okay, and they seemed to be backbenchers. They were way down on the list.
Well, it's like the Marshall McLuhan thing. Like TV's a cool, what is it, cool versus hot mediums? They were way too hot. They were just whining and tantruming and bloviating. But I also think like, this is a relatively minor point, but it's like not only is there no authority because of the indictments, there's also like, what are you actually saying here? Like Donald Trump, funny to us, but still part of his big brand with his base, is like, I'm the business guy, the best people, the best blah, blah. And the whole thing was like, the only subtext could be was like, wow, look at Donald Trump, this poor, incompetent, doddering man who just got totally hosed by this monster, and we're here to defend him. And it's like, okay, so your basic defense of your president that you treat like a Roman god is that he's a moron who can't even get a good lawyer, even though he's like the best businessman in the world.
Right. Very hard when it's your number two guy, essentially. Is sitting right there. All right, but let's just. There was one other the sort of narrative that has continued on through that, and this was, of course, the Tlaib Meadows dust up, as it were, where Mark Meadows had found the African American who works for the Trump organization and brought her to the hearing to prove that Donald Trump was not racist.
Exactly.
And. Tlaib, of course, said, you know, that's sort of racist that you would do that. And then Meadows started to pretend to cry because he knows that he's not racist. He's never uttered a racist thing in his life. He has nieces and nephews who are people of color. And then, unfortunately for him, videotape exists. And there was multiple clips of him basically saying we're going to send Barack Obama back to Kenya.
It was exhausting doing this segment yesterday because you'd get into the riff and I'd be like, all right, so there's Mark Meadows saying that. And then I would go and they'd be like, no, there's actually another clip.
Right. And so here is Mark Meadows now having to explain why he said this race. Oh, do you have one more clip of it?
We did play this one yesterday.
Oh, you did? How long is it?
It's shorter one.
Oh, yeah. Let's just play the short one, and then we'll go back to his response.
Right.
This is him as a candidate.
Good to be here with you today. I thank you so much for allowing me just a few minutes to talk with you and share a few things. But, you know, it's interesting when the more we find out, the more we realize how wrong the direction we're going. And so what we're going to do is take back our country. 2012 is the time that we're going to send Mr. Obama home to Kenya or wherever it is. We're going to do it.
Now, Barack Obama, of course, is an American.
Well, he doesn't look like one.
Apparently, that was Mark Meadows. But before we judge him, let's ask him why he was starting his campaign speeches by implying that that Barack Obama should go back to Africa.
It was early on in the primary, and certainly it didn't indicate any personal malice that I would have towards any president, previous or sitting president. Anyone who knows me knows that there is not a racial bone in my body.
Not a racial bone in his body? Did he say that on purpose?
Yeah, he said, I don't have the extra racial bone that makes you not be able to swim. No, I'm sorry. Oh, that's racist too. Ask Elijah Cummings.
Don't judge me on my actions. Judge me on the contents of my bones.
Right, exactly. And what's amazing is that his defense is literally like, look, I just use race as a campaign tactic, not as
racist for the primary, and then in the general, I toned it down.
I sat my sweet little nieces down, and I said, "Listen, your uncle's going to need to say some things over the next couple of weeks. This is a tight primary."
He also says it's not about personal malice to Obama, but people aren't saying it's because you're mean to Obama. They're saying it's because you have malice towards a race. Because
that's right. That's right. I mean, he couldn't have been more sort of nakedly denying. There, right?
I get Sean Spicer vibes from him a little.
Mm. What does that mean?
He kind of looks like him.
Oh, okay.
Red face screaming.
Right.
I was going to say emotionally unstable. Same in batch. A profound midlife crisis that has implications for other people.
It's extraordinary. And on some level, like, you know, Elijah Cummings should come out, it seems to me, and say, like, I'm a little bit disappointed to see that video. At the very least, there should be a coda to this where he says, like, yeah, I gave him cover in the hearing, and yes, we're good friends. But he
put him in a bad spot. He was, like, saying, you know, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chairman, you can vouch for me, right? Yeah. Like, what is he going to do? Nope, I can't.
We have drinks occasionally, I feel like are extremely racist.
I feel like Cummings could have been like, you're a good guy. But you know, I would say you're
racial, not racist, right. To paraphrase Omarosa.
Well,
anyways,
does have Mr. a racial Lee, bones.
Right.
Yeah.
I think Elijah Cummings, legit, and I know some people don't like this, but he is a Christian. Like, honestly, like, that's the whole way that exchange, like, and a lot of things he did on that committee. He's trying very hard to take his faith seriously.
I mean, if Cummings did body slam him at that moment, it would have made it all worth it, like actually building a relationship with him over a
bunch of years. And now you realize we never were friends. Yeah. It was all the build-up, honky. Democrats 2019.
I don't want to blow past the fact, though, that the reason why Mark Meadows has to spend the next 2 days defending the fact that he's not a racist, which, you know, is a difficult task for him, is because Rashida Tlaib had the wherewithal and the strength,
clarity,
to say this in a hearing where I don't think that we have ever had a class of Congress people which would include people who would do this on a regular basis, at least not in the past 20, 30 years. I mean, you had people, you know, call out Jeff Sessions, but it was a more formalized process. This was like she was just commenting on something that happened in the committee, didn't have, you know, it was obviously off the cuff, and good for her. But this is important, right?
Yeah. Well, part of Pelosi's shrewdness about, you know, I guess, I don't know how involved she is in committee assignments, but, or the party's shrewdness, is they put Ocasio-Cortez, Ayanna Pressley, Rashida Tlaib, these strong progressives, on the oversight committee so that they could be just constantly attacking Republicans, as opposed to, you know, a lot of people were really concerned about AOC, especially highlighting the hypocrisy and criticizing the Democratic Party. But it is so nice to see these deeply progressive Congress people like Ro Khanna and the people I just listed have this platform to go after the Trump administration. They can be the bulldogs, and at the same time, they'll still be critical of the Democratic Party. So it's deeply refreshing. And I think that their interrogations, or their, not interrogations, their questioning was the most effective out of, and the most memorable out of all of the questioning.
And there is a broader context in which they're raising these issues, right? Like that it's not just simply Trump bad or Republicans bad. It is, there is a foundation of a proactive politics from which this criticism comes.
Like if this was a Senate hearing and Cory Booker was on the committee, he'd spend 80% of it talking about himself, not letting people answer questions. But Ocasio-Cortez especially was just trying to get to the facts. And I found that refreshing.
Yeah. Now, meanwhile, Donald Trump was in North Korea and
Hanoi in Vietnam.
And excuse me, in Vietnam, anticipating a signing statement on, I guess it was supposed to happen Thursday, and that's a long way to go, essentially, to, you know, to not have that signing statement. I mean, that's huge disaster.
And it's Bolton's fault.
Pompeo.
And Pompeo. I mean, my understanding is that the North Koreans actually came with, and again, you can't be moralistic in these conversations, so I'll stipulate all of the things about the horrific nature of that regime. But they came with a deal that was significant. It would have definitely downgraded their capacity in a pretty significant way. And what they wanted was for real, robust sanctions relief. And I think it's also really important to note that this has all been conducted through the South Korean president. Yeah. Who wants this to happen. There's a whole civil society movement in South Korea. The place where the stakes for this are highest, they want a deal. And the North Koreans came with a credible one. And Bolton and Pompeo, you know, made the world more dangerous.
And Moon, I said last year he should have received the Nobel Peace Prize or been in consideration for his work with this. But secondly, what I think is important to note is this is what the deal that Trump was apparently prepared to take is identical to the Iran deal, basically, right? The partial denuclearization, basically getting rid of their nuclear weapons, but still having it for their power grid, and then sanctions relief. And Trump is trying to get that done, but at the same time saying the Iran deal is a terrible deal. It's purely motivated, clearly, by his hatred of Obama as opposed to anything substantive, which is what's sometimes he stumbles upon the right thing.
Well, here's the question. Was this a massive failure?
That's the question.
Wow, I don't know what that happened.
The soundtrack for Sam's question.
Was he listening to?
It went a little bit too loud. Oh, of course. It was like some tab I had open with The Hill. Classic. here's the question. Was this a massive failure by the foreign policy apparatus of the Trump administration? I mean, first of all, you do not travel to Vietnam to cancel a signing ceremony, right? Like, you just don't do that. It's not, that's just somebody totally effed up. And either the State Department apparatus and the foreign policy apparatus completely dropped the ball, or Trump was like, just get it done, forced it to go forward. I want to sign something on that day, because he knew that Michael Cohen was testifying and wanted to make sure that there was some type of story, and they just weren't able to execute his unreasonable demand.
Could it be both?
It could be both. I mean, I guess it's something maybe we won't find out until we read some tell-all book about it. But this is a massive failure.
It's embarrassing. If only his constituents cared at all about peace with North Korea. I mean, we care as progressives, and we care as people who want to see peace move forward in the world. If he succeeds, his supporters will use it as brownie points. But if he fails, they don't care either. So there's no real consequences for him and his base, no matter what he does.
Well, but here's the problem, right? Is that he is not going to do this again. He's not going to go, like, the entire apparatus that arranged to have a signing statement yesterday, to have a signing, not a signing statement, a signing of some type of accord, is now been completely illegitimized, right? Like, he'd be an idiot to listen to them. They'd be an idiot to listen to him. Like, I'm talking within his own government. So now you have a situation where they're just going to put North Korea to the side and they're not going to pay attention to it. And every time you do that with North Korea is when you start to have real problems.
Yeah.
Because they don't like to be put into the corner.
And why would anyone, after he tore up the Iran deal, listen to him on deals of sanctions relief and nuclear disarmament? I mean, the United States doesn't keep their word.
That's a secondary problem. I'm not sure that, like, you know, how much that plays with.
Even in the context of this one, though, and not just North Koreans are suggesting that Trump is actually lying about even the extent of sanctions relief that Kim was even asking for in the negotiations. I do think though with Iran, you're 100% right, and I do think though it's worthwhile to consider though why could Trump follow his instincts, which were good in some ways on this with North Korea. And then in addition to his personal hatred of Obama, there's a whole foreign policy apparatus set in D.C. committed to not having peace with Iran.
Right.
Which is a whole other kind of layer that doesn't apply to North Korea. But I just hope that, you know, I was glad that Bernie Sanders wanted to embrace negotiating with North Korea. I hope the Democratic response isn't like, see, this is why we need to go back to the decades of other types of diplomacy, which didn't work either. You know, there's obviously a difference between being not knowing any details and just wanting a win like Trump versus let's just go back to the same arrangement.
Well, that should always be the critique. That's why when he initially made these overtures, I was skeptical, not because I think these overtures are wrong. It's just that he is woefully incompetent. And
right. You
don't want this type of incompetence around when you're talking about a desperate regime that has a nuclear weapon. Like, you just don't want that. You don't want that floating around out there. It's just because now, you know, there's a situation where I think it's going to get where the potential again is to get super ugly in the context of, you know, Trump cannot invest in this again now.
And what's scary is that Trump only sees consequences for himself and his immediate circle, and the consequences don't really affect the United States. They affect South Korea and they affect Japan. And that's why President Moon, his Herculean efforts should be applauded, and why Trump's incompetence should be shamed, because there are millions of people in South Korea who will be harmed by these talks falling through.
Well, as Lindsey Graham said, though, that's over there. We're over here.
Sociopathic.
Maybe. I think Trump should pivot as quickly as possible to India, Pakistan. We need him.
Let's talk about just this story briefly, and then we'll go talk about the what's being reported amongst the Democrats. There's a New York Times story out today that's citing, I guess, four sources saying that, in fact, Donald Trump personally ordered his son-in-law to get a top secret security clearance, both overruling all the concerns by intelligence officials and the White House's top lawyer. This is apparently, you know, sourced with four people, not clear on on where they are. They may not even be White House officials, actually, it sounds like it. But this is, and apparently John Kelly wrote an internal memo about how he had been ordered to give Kushner the top secret clearance because he was so concerned about having responsibility for this. I mean, total CYA, the brave John Kelly, who is going to be the adult who's going to save us all, just covering his own ass, essentially, for something that he thought was highly dangerous. I mean, because I would put the odds of Jared Kushner, and apparently Jared Kushner has asked for more top secret information than any other official in the Trump administration. He has put in more requests.
It's working and it's very exciting.
I would put the chances that he has not given or sold this material to people that he is hoping will fund his family's business at somewhere between 0 and 0.7% or something.
He's just organizing it in an Evernote file. Right.
You're forgetting about all the different projects he's been on so far as, you know, counsel to the White House and all that.
Right. And to be fair, I'm not counting any of his massive foreign policy or national security achievements.
He's solving peace in the Middle East as we speak. He's over there right now.
That's going to require some classified info.
This clip is sort of fascinating because aside from the fact that ABC said, like, you know, let's have a nepotistic interviewer interview a nepotistic government official. And so Abby Hunt was sent down to
Huntsman.
Was sent down to interview Ivanka Trump. When was this? Like two or three weeks ago, I guess. It's interesting just to watch how she lies when she's lying.
There are a lot of investigations going on, as you know. Democrats launching new ones this week. One of them into the clearance process, something that you and your husband now have, mm-hmm. security clearances, but there were some issues early on. And there are a lot of people that question whether you were given special treatment by the president, overriding other
Absolutely
officials. Not. Can you speak to that?
There were anonymous leaks about there being
Pause
issues.
It. Did you see, like, is she turning more into her dad?
Yeah, she's leaning into it pretty
right?
hard.
Go backwards. That anonymous leaks.
Wow. He's going to love her even more.
Yeah. Can you speak to that?
There were anonymous leaks about there being issues, but the president had no involvement pertaining to my clearance or my husband's clearance. Zero.
What were the problems early on?
There weren't any, other than a backlog that exists of close to 1 million clearances across government.
Which is why that new. All happened with Obama.
This was happening under the Obama administration, the mm-hmm. Clinton administration. Mm-hmm. There are literally close to 1 million people in the federal government who are in the pipeline to get their permanent clearance and are on temporary status.
So no special treatment?
No.
How dare you suggest that my father would give me his daughter special treatment? I'm struck by how the amorality of the elitist class, because it's not like she and Chelsea Clinton were friends before this, right? It's not like she's this diehard far right conservative, but because she's been placed into this role and it's all about gaining power, she's completely adopted it and has become this very person. So of course she needs to maintain power, play this role, and she's going to do it. And lie.
And just bald-faced lie. And it's legal for the president to do this, right? The president has the ability to do this. It's just that they feel they got to lie. There's such a natural compunction to lie, I guess.
I guess just apropos of nothing, it's been pretty well reported that MBS said, I have Jared Kushner in my pocket.
Right, right.
Just, you know, just a little atmospheric on this one.
He has Trump in his pocket, too.
It's true. Right.
It's true, my friend, yes.
They both have significant real estate deals, Kushner and Trump, separately in Saudi Arabia.
And I imagine the dynamic is, like, you're getting me a deal. You take a taste for yourself, too, because you got to take care of my grandkids.
What's so funny is when Trump made his first visit overseas to Saudi, we were doing these bits of, like, the Saudis telling the Russians, like, why do you make it so complicated? Like, what you do is you fly him out, you put his face on a billboard, you tell him he's great, give him a gold chain.
Right,
then
exactly.
You can have a blockade on Qatar. Why do you? What's all this with the bots and all this nonsense? Just do it. You just do it.
Just cash.
Yeah, it's just cash. It's just.
All right.
He's a great president. Here's money. What's the problem?
So, there's a story that is. I think there's a version, a Politico version. There's a Washington Post version. The Democrats, and we're really, you know, now we're. I guess 6 weeks in, and we're really starting to get a sense of like what's going to happen with the Democrats, at least in Congress for 2 years. We got Pramila Jayapal introducing a Medicare for All bill that is to the left of Bernie's. We have Elizabeth Warren, at least in terms of the context of her campaign, introducing a universal child daycare that basically constructive subsidies.
Which could be paid for by our military budget increase of the last year.
Oh, yeah. It's like that.
It's not radical at all.
No. And it is not terribly expensive. It's almost just shocking just to hear how cheap this stuff is.
Exactly. Universal pre-K, there's plans. It's between $2 to $12 billion, which is chump change for Congress.
That is half the delta between what the Democrats were going to give Trump for his wall last year versus this year, right?
Yeah.
Like they were going to give him $25 billion last year. They were, you know, he wanted $5 billion, like $10, $12 billion is nothing. And the idea that you could provide universal pre-K for that. And the other part about Warren's bill is that not only is it provide universal pre-K for students, but you're also like building an infrastructure of teachers.
Yeah.
Right? That
she's the job creator.
Yeah. And we also have Democratic legislation on renewing the Voting Rights Act. We also got some gun control legislation passed. But that gun control legislation was the focus of some frustration in apparently a closed door meeting with the Democratic caucus. Because what happened on that gun control legislation, this was basically an expansion of the of background checks, of federal background checks for gun purchases. Of course, it's not going to be law because the Republicans control the Senate. However, there were 26 Democrats who joined the Republicans in voting for an amendment to the legislation that required ICE to be notified if an illegal immigrant seeks to purchase a gun. And so we have a situation where you're giving ICE more authority. And ICE is a highly problematic agency for obvious reasons. Simultaneously, there's a story about how there's a crisis at the border because we have too many babies that we're storing in a Texas facility. But So Pelosi went in and basically chastised her caucus. We're either a team or we're not. We have to make that decision because she did not want these Democrats to abandon the Democratic caucus and vote with the Republicans on this amendment. There's an argument. Hoyer and Clyburn on one side, Pelosi on the other, as to whether Democrats should be making these procedural votes to allow amendments because they're afraid of in 2020 that they're going to be these votes are going to be used against them in House races. And apparently AOC got up at one point and said she said something to the effect of, OK, this is what it was. And this is her spokesperson saying this. She said that when activists ask her why she had to vote for a gun safety bill that also further empowers an agency that forcibly injects kids with psychotropic drugs, they're going to want to know. They're going to want to know a list of names, and she's going to give it to them. Basically, like, we're going to primary you guys,
right? And it's encouraging to me that Pelosi was on the side of not the primarying, but AOC's kind of in her wing, at least.
Well, what is it? What does that say to you that she is?
I think it says more about the fact that these gun control measures, I think Pelosi has gone all in on. She understands that it's a political win for the Democrats in terms of polling, that it should be easy. And I do think she wants to keep the caucus together. I think, as we were discussing before we went on air, Pelosi is a great opposition leader, and she is a great partisan, as you said. And now that Trump's in office, she feels more emboldened to stand up to him with a united caucus. And I think that's more of her concern, whereas AOC is more concerned about the substance of it, and she wants to abolish ICE altogether.
I think that's true. I think the idea, though, the thing that's encouraging is because there's always been these two, the legacy fight, if we were having this conversation 15 years ago, would have been about Democrats being weak and not being willing to just be partisan fighters and being afraid and too timid. There's an ideological fight as well that's going on here. But the fact is like, don't be afraid to go into an election and slough off a procedural vote on whether or not you voted for an amendment. You got to stand for something and not waffle and stay with the pack, essentially, And Pelosi is good at that, I think. And
she's
it is
very
interesting.
Good at it. But do you think it's a slight double-edged sword, though, because I think what I like about her is that quality. But I actually think, and this is being applied in a good case towards the trash members of the Democratic caucus, but the same, like, let's keep it synchronized, don't rock the boat thing is also the same reason why she's, been not good on Medicare for All necessarily, why she kind of mocked the Green New Deal. So I think that there's, it's a give and take with that dynamic.
No, too often it's been a negative. But yeah. Recently, I feel that she has seized the political moment of the Trump administration to make it a more net positive than it has been a net negative in 2019.
I think there's also an argument that her poo-pooing these things like Medicare for All and Green New Deal, at least at this point, are a way of basically saying to those 26, Democrats who will abandon on procedural votes, like, don't worry, I got you back, until she doesn't. And, she's there for basically the deal for her is I'm out of here in a couple of years. After 2020, somebody new is going to be here. And this is also good insofar as it exposes Clyburn and Hoyer, as being like
terrible.
This ilk is not good. We have 240 some odd Democratic Congress people, and we should not be kowtowing to 10% of the caucus to go because they're afraid of taking a procedural vote.
So do we think that Hoyer is going to make a play for Speaker whenever Pelosi leaves?
I don't know. I always feel like he's too old, but I also feel like these guys never die.
I think that's why it's even more important to encourage some of these primary challenges in many ways, because in 2020 and beyond, if we're determining who's going to be the Speaker of the House, new blood, more progressives are going to be less likely to vote for a guy like Hoyer and going to want someone new in there.
Right. Also, it would be nice to knock off Hoyer, but that's never going to happen.
That would be nice.
That's never going to happen.
He's insufferable.
He is insufferable. All right. Speaking of insufferable, we've got to get to Andy Kindler.
Ooh.
I'm joking.
That's
of
not
course.
A nice way to welcome a guest.
I didn't welcome him. He's not listening now.
He is. He does listen. Don't he? He's very narcissistic. He likes to be like, did they mention me before?
That's not nice to
I
say.
Know. Did you see how I did that? I did a misdirect. Boom. Sorry, Andy. We love you.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna bring back Andy Kindler. Do you want to stay for a little bit? Because
sure.
We're gonna be talking about some really
terrible people.
Terrible people. Mark Stein and Dennis Miller. They're on tour. The magic is back.
I think Emma just summarized.
Holmes and Watson?
She just summarized the whole next segment.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Andy Kindler will join us. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority. I don't know what I was expecting to start with at that moment when the music went down. I thought it was the beginning of the show again. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, on a Friday is you know, is such a special day that people came up with the saying TGIF. But around here, we say TGIK.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, Andy believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, AndyKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song, Andy Kindler.
Andy Kindler, it has been too long, Andy. How long
has
it been?
You don't think I heard that segue? You think I don't listen to every second of the show?
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable. You have to use me as an unpleasant segue? Speaking of things that are obnoxious and over the top and are unpleasant. Speaking about annoying people.
No,
Andy
no,
Kindler. No,
no.
I went too far. I think I brought my own opinion to myself in there.
Andy, it's not the first time we've talked since the new year, is it? No.
I don't know, but every time I see that vest on me,
What's the vest?
That's on. That's from Raising Dad. You do that to get me to make me feel less than.
Wait a second. What is it? Can we put it up on the screen?
Yeah, it's that vest.
What vest?
The sweater vest.
I don't. You're seeing a vest. I'm not seeing anything.
Don't you watch YouTube? Don't you watch yourself on YouTube?
No, of course not. I'm doing the show. How can I watch myself?
Oh, okay.
On YouTube?
Okay. Maybe I should watch the show. Maybe I should get my head in the game.
But, oh, that vest. Oh, that's very nice. Is that from...
yeah, it is nice.
Is that from the Witches of Eastwick? Or what was that show that my daughter...
It was Raising Dad. I played a teacher on Raising Dad, and that was one of the sweater vests. I mean, they knew I love sweater vests, but that one was particularly attractive.
Are you a sweater vest guy?
No, nobody is a sweater vest guy. That's the kind of picture that you would put up there to emphasize how annoying I am.
Rick Santorum is, and put Emma and Michael up. I mean, I wear a sweater vest occasionally, so I thought maybe we had that in common. But what was the show that you were on? The Witches of Eastwick or whatever it was?
Raisers of Waverly Place.
I didn't know.
Come on. Witches, you know you watched that show. You have kids.
I did watch
your
it. That's what I'm talking about. Witches of Waverly Place, I guess. With
what did you
with
say? The
it's not I guess
Selena Gomez.
I know the exact
yes,
name.
Yes, Selena Gomez. Selena Gomez.
Go.
My
oh,
daughter.
I know her.
My daughter loved that show, and she was very excited one time when you came on. I was like, I know that guy.
That's a great story. She was excited one time when I came on.
One
she
time.
Said, I know that
the
guy.
Second time.
I don't even
so
believe
much.
That part of the story.
That's not true.
You're being very that's demanding. Okay, today,
I'm gonna, let me switch out of my negative mode. Yes. I don't like that character. Let me be a team player now. Let's go.
To be honest, she got really excited when she met Caroline Ray because she was the mom on Phineas and Ferb. But, I mean, it's sort of
but
like
I mean,
being
seriously.
Excited about you.
When she met Nick Pakai, who is the voice of Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Nick Pakai?
I don't know what I'm saying.
The was cat
I don't know
Sabrina
what I'm saying. Nick Pakai was the voice.
He was the voice of the cat?
No, I think I mixed up everything. But he was on the show.
Because I don't think he would have been the voice of Sabrina.
No, yeah.
I don't have my facts in line.
All right. So, Andy, now let me ask you this. I was looking at
I'm
your.
I'm not a facts guy.
I was looking at your
post-facts world, man.
I was looking at
facts
your.
Facts are funny things. Sorry,
they don't care about your feelings.
They say the darndest things. Facts say the darndest things.
Oh God. Well, so I was looking at your Twitter feed, and I just have you are you what's going on? Are you like are you meditating? Because you I don't
oh.
see. Like it's, I went back days, and you're not in a fight with anybody.
I know. It's my because it's from therapy. It's my as my therapy gets better, my ability to interact with people socially goes down, and it's good. It's a good thing. My you know, it's like me stay every minute staying away from Twitter. I get a gold. Psychological star.
Oh,
are you scared
right.
that it will impact your ability?
Stars, do we?
You scared that it will impact your ability to bother Chris Cuomo? Like too much of a good thing?
He,
therapy.
Oh, what is this
Here
thing where these jerks? These and I call him a creep. I call Chris Cuomo a creep, but not really. He's not a creep. But he has Christie on, and he's asking Christie if we can trust. What what Trump? You know, can we trust what this person's saying? He's going to Christie for honesty.
His brother's good friend, Chris
right.
Christie.
Oh my!
I also noticed that he said that you had a problem at one point. You tweeted out just sort of randomly, "Anderson Cooper is a horrible show."
Yeah, that's true.
That
well,
is
that
true.
Was just that. I don't even think of that as a tweet. As a that's just without what everyone's thinking.
Yeah, I mean, as tell me the lie.
Were you even watching the show at the time?
Yeah,
or
I was.
No, you just
sometimes
like,
I do.
Popped into your head.
Yeah, it's one of those things where they have. You know how they have like one of they think a news show is bringing one of Trump's horrible friends on there, and that's all they do. They bring like a horrible, and then they argue with one of Trump's friends. Like they're. I mean, I don't watch it that much. You're right.
Is it kind of a
he
thought spiral?
Bored. Mike, doesn't he sound bored?
Anderson Cooper?
Anderson Cooper.
Yes.
He has a monotone voice.
He sounds bored unless somebody is saying that Trump is obviously demonstrably a racist. Then he gets excited. How could you say that?
And then he has his buddy Don Lemon on, and then they're both boring and stare straight into the camera.
How can you say that?
Lemon gets out in front a little bit, though, doesn't he now,
yeah,
Don
but,
Lemon?
Yeah.
Let's get after it.
That's Cuomo.
I'm sorry.
No. Cuomo. I think he has Lemon on when there's like a Trump racist remark so that he can get him fired up a little bit.
That's true.
They bring Don Lemon
rile
in.
Because
he's the only one who can say it's racist, apparently.
He's the Ray Lewis of the CNN crew. He walks out there, does the dance, gets everyone fired up. For the Trump.
You know what I love? Funny. I love when they spend 10 minutes of their show talking to each other about what's coming up on Cuomo's show. 10 minutes! It's 10 minutes!
I noticed that the other day.
And they think they're bantering, too.
Yeah, I've noticed that. The banter thing and the handoff in the shows, I thought that seems to be like pretty soon all the shows are going to be 60 minutes, like they're going to be like 35 minutes of handoff. on both sides of the show.
We should do that with MR and TMBS. That would be great.
Capture the warmth of the Rachel Maddow, Lawrence O'Donnell toss.
What did that toss is like? Lawrence was like, "Wow, that was a lot about Russia there, Rachel. I'm going to be not doing that." Donald Trump said something stupid. No, we're going to ride that out for about 30.
I think it's more like, with all due respect, I think O'Donnell was like, "I only want to do 40 minutes tonight."
Yeah, I'm going to do it. It's like, that's no problem, Lawrence. Russia, 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 Russia.
So, Andy, have you been on tour? I see you're going to all these, like, prestigious festivals.
Hey, you know, I'm going... Everything has a certain edge to you. Where you look at it, you look at it a little differently. It could be a little slam. You know what I mean?
If I wasn't thinking the right way. I saw, like, you're going to the JFL and to the CFL.
Next week, I'm going to... Do we have listeners in Aurora, Illinois?
I'm going to the comedy
shrine in Aurora next weekend, Friday and Saturday. See, I have things to promote. You told me next time I come on, I better get something to promote. Now look what I did.
And so what do you do when you go to the comedy shrine? Do you have to give an offering of some sort or some type of...
I go crazy. With, you know, I'm not worried about doing the anti-Trump material on the road, Sam. I don't know what you thought about it. I'm not afraid.
Is the anti-Trump material working on the road for you or no?
I haven't found. I guess the fact that I say that I would not, I hope someone who supports Trump does not come to the show, don't go to the show. I haven't seen any racists at my, I call them racists. I haven't seen any racists at my show.
All right. Well, that's not terribly surprising. I think if someone's aware of your work and they're, let's say...
I'll tell you what. We need to build that wall, but I just love that Jew fella that's always getting into conflicts with CNN personalities on Twitter.
Well, I saw Russell Brand at a casino in Atlantic City a few years ago, and a lot of people showed up not knowing his politics because they were just at the casino. About 15% of the crowd left around 30 minutes in, and he had to shout down many hecklers saying, you know, you hate America, go to X, Y, and Z, Muslim country, blah, blah, blah.
I'm surprised it's only 15%.
At the casino. That's where I make my stand.
I want to make a request when they say to go to I don't want to just go to a Muslim country. I have a list of specific places I'd like to go.
Oh, well, but they're not going to pay for you to go there.
Really?
They're just asking you to go. They're just saying go. They're not saying we're going to subsidize a trip of your choice.
I will. Thank you.
Start a GoFundMe.
Yeah.
So, Andy, should we get into this? My understanding is that you are tweeting out the tour. I mean, I think we've talked about this. For longtime listeners, you probably want to, you're probably sick of us talking about Dennis Miller at this point. But for new listeners, I'm sure you're going to be excited.
Explain what he does, Seth. Please explain to the new listener.
Dennis Miller. Apparently broke up with Bill O'Reilly when O'Reilly couldn't have a show. And he finally was able to say to Bill, you and I, we are not a good comedy match. And so I'm going to have to jettison you because my good friend, and apparently he's being billed as a comedian, Mark Stein.
Mark Stein?
He's the guy he's traveling with him. He's the guy who got paid out $4 million. When his pay or play show for CRTV fell apart, which is just absurd. This is a web show.
What is CRTV?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's something that's funded by Mercers or we're not clear exactly who's paying for it. But so here is Mark Stein and Dennis Miller. Here is a clip. Somebody videotaped part of their show, probably illicitly. Oh. I am totally against this, but it is newsworthy, and therefore we need to play it. This is a clip from their show. Do we know where the show was?
Pennsylvania.
This one was in Pennsylvania. How do they bill this show? Because, Andy, I noticed you tweeted out something about it, right?
Yeah. Who likes Nazis? Something like that.
The tour is... The tour is called the Adorable Deplorable Tour.
That That's adorable. Oh, he rhymed it.
Yeah, it rhymes. And here is a clip of this stuff. Hold on to your hats, folks.
And that's exactly why I'm here. I am a college professor of anthropology and sociology at a liberal arts college in a nearby state that has very high taxes. I have recently been red-pilled. My students...
Pause it for 1 second. Now, this is a teacher. She gets up. She's asking a question. This is the key I realize now for these tours is you have a long question and answer period. That way you don't have to do much work.
Easy money.
You don't have to prepare, right? Like we basically do their version of a live show every day that we take phone calls and IMs. And she's a professor at a liberal arts college, presumably in New York, I would say. Western New York, probably, because it's a high tax state. And so she's come down, and she's probably like at Elmira, somewhere.
SUNY Fredonia.
But if she's at a state school and she's complaining about taxes, she's got a real
Marist?
Problem. Right?
Is Marist in New York?
It's Catholic school.
Marist is, but I don't feel like it's way out there, out in Western Mass.
It's private too.
Where's Bennington?
Bennington's in Vermont.
Now we're just naming colleges.
Yeah.
But all right, so she's up there. She says she's been red-pilled. Now, I don't know how Dennis Miller and Mark Stein don't know what this means, but red-pilled means that, like, you took the pill that you get offered in the Matrix, so you really see what's going on. And
Nice.
The show looks good, by the way. The audio sounds great on that show, and it looks like a fun time.
Well, this is not a professional recording, to be fair.
My students are group-thinking people. So I'm here to get some teaching advice from you guys.
Pause it. Now, wait a second. I just also...
Did you hear the guy go, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was Andy. I thought it was somebody.
Watch.
That was me. That was me.
She's complaining about her students... who are all group thinking. And I can assure you there's not a single dissenter in this audience.
Exactly.
Who's here, like, but go ahead.
Can you
give
me any piece?
Well, listen, I get red pill, right? Red pill means you get white. Does that mean that?
I don't know what red pill means.
I think it's something new from the movie, isn't it?
Yes.
With blue pills and red pills.
Is that like you, Dennis? Mm. I started off on the left. And then I actually listened to logic and reason instead of emotion.
Well, I admire that.
Woo, they're group thinkers!
And utopia, and I want my students to learn that because my colleagues are still where we used to be before.
I will tell you, to be honest, I wouldn't die on that hill. I think kids are lost. I think life might bring them around when they start to send those checks out to a government. But I think if you think you can go in now to kids who from eighth grade on have been taught to think one way and quibble with your ability to make a living, and I feel badly for you. But listen,
it's a funny joke.
Pause it for 1 second. Andy, how many times do you think Dennis Miller's been in a school where eighth graders are being taught in the past 30 years?
He
hasn't been in any actual private. He hasn't been anywhere that wasn't a mansion in many years.
Like, I don't understand how they can just disregard that young people are more liberal in every part of history from the beginning of time. I mean, except for like Israel right now. But I mean, that's really how it is.
Honorable mention.
It's not indoctrination. It's just human nature.
Continue.
But they don't like to hear they're not open to hearing neo-Nazi messages to kids because the group think. Yeah. They group think that Nazism is bad.
Here is, all right, go ahead.
Badly for you, but listen, there's so many things you can instill in kids. There's so many ways, but if you come flat out, they're going to come for you like the villagers in Frankenstein.
You should have done something out of the corn and stuff.
I don't wear the hat at school.
No, I'm just saying, I don't hear it about schools. I did a college campus for the first time 2 nights ago. And there was like 1,000 people there, and it was grim. I had a guy motherfucking me in the back of the crowd, and there were teachers there. And I remember thinking, you know, if Jesus Christ came onto a college campus now and talked to kids and changed water into wine, they'd go after him for killing the microorganisms in the water. Crazy
place now.
Wow. You gotta admit that's funny, Sam.
I'm sorry. Allow me to step out of this group thing. That's killer material.
If Jesus changed water to wine and John the Baptist was bop, 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 bop,
I love the fact that that the proof of Jesus being the Son of God because of his miracles is really just reduced to like an act he does as he tours college campuses.
That would be the perfect Fox News.
Hey, look at me. I'm walking on water Fox News. I did this last night in Iona.
Jesus is Carrot Top, and he's just on Fox. Exactly. Be like, they don't like the magic tricks anymore because I'm kids are too PC. Thanks for having me on, Tucker.
Oh, they don't like the water into wine bit anymore.
Yeah, the kids are too sensitive for water into wine. You know, back in my day, we thought that was awesome and far out. Now the kids are so sensitive.
That was a great bit.
Because of the politically correct culture.
All of a sudden, I got Bill W. going to the...
This is great stuff. Let's continue. They're just pounding waters up there, too. Go ahead.
Organisms in the water. It's a crazy place now. You gotta make a living. Use your head and move your bowels outside. That's what I recommend, but I'm a bit of a wuss about this stuff. I think there's some sort of weird coup d'etat that's happened. We all act like it's gonna happen if we don't watch ourselves. Listen, when you see this guy talking this week, and he says that, Mark, we were talking about it in the back room, it's astounding. I think there was a full-bore coup d'etat afoot that was only held off by one thing and one thing alone. Trump is a crazy son of a bitch who never had that office, and he would take them on bare knuckle. But I think if he didn't, look at these people.
What is the coup d'etat that he's talking about?
He said it twice. He also said it twice. I think he just thought it would get a laugh, so he brought it back again.
What is the coup d'etat?
What's happening in Venezuela right now?
You can't make jokes.
You can't. Guaido's like, hey, I don't like Maduro's dating material anymore.
But what
You're
is
canceled.
The coup d'etat that he's talking about that
it's,
Trump
it's
held
like
off?
It's like the people that use gaslighting and don't know what it means. He doesn't know what it means.
Oh, that's true.
We're getting gaslit into a coup d'etat over here, but you took the red pill like Stacey Dash did in Clueless.
What he means is that you used to be able to make jokes, and now you can't make jokes because they have gotten control of... whether who can make jokes.
But Trump fended off they.
Yeah, by saying,
so that's
I don't care
not a coup d'etat.
John, there's no coup d'etat. Yeah. Trump is the only thing standing in the way of a coup d'etat. Yeah.
No, he stopped the coup d'etat.
I'm the only one letting you do a venue in Teaneck, New Jersey, where you bitch and whine about college kids. I'm the person standing against history.
Dave Rubin's going to come out complain for 15 minutes about his demonetization on his YouTube channel.
We've got a great show tonight. Mark Stein has a weird accent that makes no sense. He's from Canada, but he tries to talk like an Oxford Don, doesn't like black people. Then Dave Rubin is going to talk about demonetization. All to be with the cleanup hitter of Dennis Miller with 1970s gerbil references.
So here they're arguing this is the sort of like the... you know, Donald Trump may be horrible at everything, but he's managed to stop PC in its tracks.
Yeah, then they threw a grenade under the door, is what Alice Castellano said last week on This Week. He throws a grenade under the door.
That's not possible. Unless it's in, like, I guess, a men's bathroom stall.
Yeah, right. So
there's a doggy door.
There's a very low threshold.
You don't throw a grenade under the door because what happens is it hits the door and bounces back at you, incidentally. But go ahead.
Trump is a crazy son of a bitch who never had that office, and he would take them on bare knuckle. But I think if he didn't, look at these people.
That's one great service that Trump did, even if he never did anything else. just to say, I'm going to say this stuff, and I don't care if you don't like me saying
it. If Mark Stein gets arrested, it would be for something
disturbing.
Wow, they're really getting to it.
They're getting to it. He's up there with the Trump. The one thing he's able to do is get up there and talk about the shithole countries when nobody else would, or say that it's speak the truth. That
Americans were typically good very neo-Nazis. Respectful of Haiti before Trump was president.
Right.
He finally allowed a bunch of fucking weird suburban white people to trash Haiti. Never happened before.
Now, let's just pivot for a moment. As you know, CPAC is going on, and apparently they came up with a really funny thing at CPAC at their bar. And
they're very arch. Very arch over there.
Oh, yeah. And this is let's read off the menu here that they have at the CPAC bar. There's a Russian collusion, which is a vodka soda.
Oh, vodka because of Russia.
Right, because vodka is
gotcha.
And soda's very collusion-y.
And things just bubble up.
There's an AOC, which is, of course, a juice box.
Why?
Because she's young.
Not really
and
a bar
a winding,
drink.
A winding. You don't have winding socialists love those juice boxes?
Shirley Temple would have been where I went with that. But.
Yeah, that would be a better joke.
And the wall is a whiskey neat.
Why are these such uncreative cocktails? That you think CPAC could afford a bartender that would just put a little spin on things?
It's amazing to me that the wall must be like, if you're for the wall, you're somebody who drinks your whiskey.
Or there's no ice. Like, are you getting rid of ice?
You have a wall? Right, abolish ice. That's why
this is the kind of stuff you write when you
whiskey
put up the
neat
jail
if you have a wall. That's actually super clever. That would be not funny so much for CPAC.
Yeah. We Love Ice would have been a better one where they just give you a cup of ice.
AOC right. Should have been something like a non-ice related drink, right?
Right. I mean, it should have been something that was like super expensive and you get nothing or something, right?
Yeah.
Like it's got to be like
an empty glass.
Yeah.
No one's ordering an AOC daiquiri. Anyway.
Right. Nobody's getting
a juice box.
Box.
Yeah. So if you just lean into it, just
right.
Say an empty glass.
Right. Just like
how about a bleeding heart, Bloody Mary.
Very good. And of course, a Sarah Sanders is a bourbon on the rocks.
Yeah, they're what? Tired. Why? They're just tired by that point.
Yeah,
no, they heat up.
Why is it on the what? I don't get it.
Oh god,
I don't get it either. Oh, maybe because bourbon is smoky and she's got
smoky eye.
Okay, and then of course this is great. The Mexico will pay for it is a tequila sunrise.
Again, goodness. I'm deeply disappointed in the lack of cocktail variety or creativity.
Oh my! It's also it's a very weird mix of just drinks.
They have money,
but they don't have creativity.
And of course, a tea rum derangement syndrome. Right? Tea rum derangement syndrome is a rum and coke.
I want to go back to
tea rum. Can I get a tea rum? Derangement syndrome, please.
They should have said that Trump and Coke, like just you know, and as opposed
there
to putting
done
right, that would have been good.
Then you make think about cocaine though. Cocaine Mitch.
Cocaine Mitch is just actual cocaine.
A Trump and Mitch.
And this
cocaine Mitch is his Chinese.
Trump and Mitch
veteran.
Is a rum and coke. That'd be good. Actually. A Trump and Mitch.
And then this one is like the classic. We got to explain the joke. The Kavanaugh quote. I like beer. Is a beer.
they didn't even specify what kind.
Why couldn't they just call it like a Kavanaugh, and that's a beer?
Yeah, just the Kavanaugh will be like a Budweiser. That would be funny. That would work.
And of course, the crying Chuck Schumer is wine.
Just but
wait, but wait, why
do they not specify
Schumer?
Why? What kind of beer or what kind of wine?
It's just beer, wine.
Also, by the way, Chuck Schumer doesn't cry, but he is whiny. So whiny wine. That's a direct line right there.
Yeah, why not just
that doesn't
even
make
any
sense.
Why don't you say just like,
I'll
take a Chuck Schumer.
Here's
a
glass of wine.
Right,
Chuck Schumer. I would make that joke.
$2 Chuck.
And also crying is misspelled.
Don't help them. Don't help them, guys.
Yeah, these are all better because of our work.
There is one guy on the right who has a bit of creativity when it comes to these things. I'm talking about Ben Garrison, the cartoonist.
Oh, let's see.
He's a talented guy right here.
Drink up.
Oh, I gotta see this.
Someone else will pay for it.
Oh, man.
Wow.
AOC's bar, no ice. They got to that joke.
Right.
The Venezuela surprise.
You can have a late-term abortion or a tax on the beach.
Of course they have to put her in a crop top for no reason. Yeah. Just to emphasize how creepily obsessed with her they are.
Yeah. That's
Stop pulling her pigtails, guys.
And a Reason and Logic liqueur. Oh, it's really tiny.
That is hilarious. That is so funny.
I got to tell you.
Socialism is sexy.
This might say something bad.
Oh, look at that. Look at that.
Late-term abortion in a bottle thing. So.
Yeah, it's
inconvenient.
What's that?
Convenient.
What's that?
If there was literally a drink that could produce a late-term abortion, I mean, I see market possibility here.
Well, I mean, yeah. I think there are.
You should talk to investors about that.
Right. That's hey.
Hey, it looks
I'm trying
like
to be market
if Crumb couldn't draw. That's how it looks.
I like the Venezuela surprise because, of course, just like
was
Venezuela,
that the aid package?
Right.
So Andy, right. Where can people see you in in Illinois this weekend?
Boy, no, but you really set it up so it sounds attractive to people. That's what I like.
Where can they?
No, this course. Weekend I'm home because I have a road gig next week. I got to rest up.
Oh, I understand.
But next weekend, Aurora, Illinois, at the famous The Comedy Shrine.
Wow, the Comedy Shrine. And, of course, Thought Spiral. People can check you out every week on Thought Spiral.
Well, wait, is that where Richard Pryor – where did Richard Pryor grow up? He's from Illinois. Is that why it's called
the
Comedy
Shrine? He is from there, I think. I think he is from there.
Is that why it's the Comedy Shrine? Because it's the home of Richard Pryor?
Because
that would make a lot more sense.
I don't think so.
That would be funny. It's like, no, it's because Andrew Dice Clay used the urinal here once. That's why.
Oh,
now,
man.
I noticed it's you still fun. Use the hashtag Bob's Burgers. When was the last time you were on Bob's Burgers?
It's been a little bit of a while, but it's coming up.
Is that right?
No, I've been on it sometimes. How come I make it sound like something's wrong with my career anytime any question is asked?
What's going on? What is that? I mean,
No. Everything's good. Everything's good. I think they're really kind of like they don't want to give me too much.
No, I have the same. You know? I have the same arrangement with them as well. I don't want to be overexposed.
And don't we want to get in? Are we going to be in the movie?
Yeah. What's going on with that?
I don't know, but I. I need the money. No, I'm doing everything is fine. I'm trying to cut back on my TV appearances. Hey, I might be on the show. Do a spot on the show Baskets.
Nice. I've never heard of it.
That's Zach Galifianakis' show.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was still on.
Yeah. What is this? A new? Are you reading from a How to Deter People from Being Excited book? Andy, go ahead and tell us what you're doing. I got some good ones. Oh, comedy clubs are still in business. Oh, great! Yeah, that's nice.
I thought most of it had all just wrapped up. Basically, I thought we were done with most of the entertainment stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's right. I think we're almost. I'm almost drawing too much attention to the lack of a plush gig. But you know what? Chicago's fun, but you know what's better? The suburbs.
Right. No, of course. Yeah, that's where you want to mostly play is the suburbs.
You don't want to be overexposed.
When are you coming to New York?
This is so sad. I was in New York.
When he's in New York ever.
I haven't heard from Letterman in a long time. I don't know if they're on hiatus. What's going on? I want to come and see you guys in studio.
All right, we got to do that soon. Andy Kindler, it is always a pleasure and an honor. I love you as well. Thank you so much.
Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Andy. Andy Kindler, ladies and gentlemen. All right, let's do a couple more. Let's just do a couple of these videos to CPAC.
Conservatives are getting funny, and it's making liberals afraid.
It's making liberals so afraid. The most interesting thing coming out of CPAC, it seems to me, and I know you covered Gorka yesterday, was to watch yes. Van Jones' like latest turn in his career.
What do you think of Van Jones? Were you ever a fan?
I mean, he's as good as it gets, and not on CNN. It's like the lowest bar. I liked him more, and I feel like weirdly he's been kind of one note recently.
I just remember in 2011 at Netroots Nation, maybe it was 2012, 2011, maybe it was 2010. I can't really remember. He felt that we needed to push back on the Tea Party, and he was talking about Glenn Beck as being highly problematic. And then he started an organization that that was about income inequality, and that seemed to last for like 6 months.
I feel like he was he rose to prominence by being further left and has kind of just melded into the wallpaper of CNN.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that started before he got to CNN. I think that was part of his reformation. He was way out in front on environmental issues. I mean, I think he's a guy who's been like searching around for a brand. And he's still, I think in many respects, still searching. But here he is.
For his core brand proposition.
Is this the where he talks about immigration? But he's there talking about criminal justice reform and that conservatives are leading on this. And I think maybe there is some, they're not holding it back, let's put it this way, in the way that they do on just every other
because
initiative.
Because the Koch brothers have decided to say that this Fun issue's things. Okay. So.
Right, exactly. They have permission now for this.
So it's not benevolent, Van Jones.
Let's first do this, okay? Let's play number 11, and then we'll play, let's talk about the two wings, right? Or let's start actually with number 10, and then we'll do, here's number 10. This is Van Jones sitting there with Matt Schlapp. You know, Matt Schlapp, famous, incidentally, for saying that the only reason why Steele was picked as RNC chair. This is his friend, incidentally. Was because he was black.
Mm. Well, Schlapp was defending the guy who said that.
Oh, was defending the guy, yeah, to be fair. Guys. And then basically said, like, I don't see what the problem is. Yeah. Here they go. They're on a panel with, I don't know
with
who else.
Looks like Colorful Socks
right.
McGee.
Colorful.
Here's the deal. The conservative movement in this country, unfortunately, from my point of view, is now the leader on this issue of reform, in that you look at Mississippi, a rock rib, totally conservative, former jailer is the governor there, Governor Bryant. Governor Bryant has cut the prison population and crime at the same time. Deal in Georgia cut the prison population and crime at the same time. Rick Perry cut the prison population, prison expenditures, and crime at the same time. Ohio, South Carolina, what you're seeing now are Republican governors being tough on the dollars, tough on crime, and shrinking prison populations and showing the rest of the country that it can be done. Now, my problem is I now have a conservative movement that for libertarian reasons, for Christian conservative reasons, and for fiscally conservative reasons is actually doing a great job on what should be my issue. This is supposed to be my issue. You are stealing my issue. So,
they're welcoming you. Why do you keep going?
Look, I'm going to stay in my party. But what I want
to
say.
Open arms to the back entrance.
But take some dadgum credit for being smart. Take some dadgum credit for getting it.
Alabama, like they don't Mississippi care. None still of them the care about incarceration this is, rates in the country.
Why does he feel the need to do this? Why does he want to be in this room?
Well,
why?
He's building a brand, and that's why you go to these things. I mean, look, let's be honest. Like,
It's deeply disappointing.
What's amazing too, he's talking about take some credit for criminal justice reform, and they only thing they care about is that we did it over your party.
If you had said the substance of criminal justice reform, if you had laid out the issue and what it's meant to achieve, they would hate it on the substance of the issue. They just care that it's a political win and that it's a black guy telling them that they did something right.
Exactly.
And Trump says it all the time, incidentally. Trump said, I mean, it was one of the funny Trump clips of like a couple of months ago where he was talking about continuing to race bait the NFL players protesting, obviously. And in the context of one of his rambling answers, when he's trying to appear in a moment where he's trying to appear lucid and reasonable, he's like, I understand it's some legitimate issues, but I took care of it. He literally said he took care of this entire issue. So it is both profoundly inaccurate. Mississippi and Alabama have the highest incarceration rates in the country still, as an example. The bill they signed was fine, but really small. And Trump is not only taking care of it, he's saying he solved all of U.S. history. So I think we're good.
Oh, that's good. That was pretty super easy. And here is Van explaining why he's there. Because, Emma... Birds.
That's why we tell our kids liberty and justice for all. Okay? Because if you don't have, if you have justice without liberty, we want social justice. We want to make sure the little people aren't run over. But we don't care anything about individual rights. What we get is totalitarianism. Justice without liberty is totalitarianism. And liberty, let the market do whatever you want to and don't care about the poor, don't care about the planet, gives you too much corporate power in the system.
What?
So liberty without justice is also a nightmare. We tell our kids liberty and justice for all because I've never seen a bird that can fly with only a left wing. Not even in Berkeley. I've never seen a bird fly with only a left wing. I've never seen a bird fly with only a right wing, not even in Mississippi. We need each other. We need each other.
That's a Dennis Miller level.
I get too emotional about this stuff. That guy, what is he doing?
He's explaining how birds fly.
I mean, it's honestly, I really think it's the kind of thing where the mainstream media and being in it for too long stamps out any smart or progressive inclination that you have for a lot of people. It's just that he drank the Kool-Aid. Why does he want to feel accepted in that room? It's the equivalent of what Ben Carson did. Not the equivalent, but like he would go around the country and take paid speeches to make conservatives feel good about themselves.
No, but it was good because white people like when black people use animal analogies. It reminds them of Green Mile. He's going in the right direction.
I don't think that it's being in the mainstream media makes you like this. I think that's how you get into the mainstream media. Like, it may reinforce this inclination, but I think, and it's not exclusively, I think you can get into, but to get into the mainstream media, to stay in the mainstream media and to thrive there, for the most part, there are exceptions, but for the most part, you have to have a certain mentality where you are, where your pursuit, the goal that you're pursuing is not necessarily, is one that would require this type of talk. I mean,
I just think like Cenk, my boss, is a great example of someone who didn't have those inclinations, went in, refused to play ball, and like that's why he's not there anymore.
Can you do an impression of Cenk telling the bird analogy?
This is the second time gotta
have both wigs. Of course.
This is the second time you guys have asked me to do impressions, and I've told you that I don't want to.
All right, here is
it's gonna happen again though. Just now, fair warning. Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like having that bird with both a left and a right wing. As then the audience then decides also they want to shoot the bird.
Undocumented immigrants right now have a lower crime rate than the rest of us, and yet we don't talk about that. No, hold on. What I'm saying is...
I told you I control the time.
Okay, good. What I'm saying is there are stereotypes about Trump supporters. There are stereotypes... Exactly. There are stereotypes about Trump supporters. There are stereotypes about straight white men. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm sitting next to one of the best people in this country who's a straight white man, and a Trump supporter. And we've just got to stop talking about each other and talk more to each other. We will find other areas, whether it's family leave, whether it's...
That's where you messed up. As soon as you mentioned the illegals, it was pretty strong before.
I mean, just imagine someone on a panel at the, left con, okay, if there was such a thing. And that person said, there's a lot of misperceptions about, white men. Like the idea of, like, everybody's going to boo. Right? Like the way that they're like the hostility towards the immigrants, like he's going to just blow right through
this. This is not a direct analogy, obviously, but I would say it's an adjacent space to what you're talking about. When I was at this conference a couple years ago in Detroit, and it was like it was in the brand space, but it was very, it's a liberal thing, right? It's a lot of concern about the environment and so on. And the point is there was like multiple panels on like, how do we bridge the divide? How do we listen to each other? How do we figure out what the other side, like the instinct there is so, it's Van Jones.
Right.
I mean, that you saw it. Those right. are the two sides of it.
I mean, facts don't care about your feelings, CPAC. Listeners, it's factually accurate. They commit crimes at, I believe, half the rate that regular people do because they don't want to get caught and get shipped out. I mean, that's actually accurate.
Well, you know what all the CPAC right. audience would say is they're here anyway, and that's the crime.
That's the crime.
Yeah.
That's their whole point. It's to exist is a crime because their starting point is racist fear nonsense.
Right. I just mean then that undercuts their entire point, which is the reason that we have to have stricter immigration policies is because they're bringing crime. Right.
Well, their entire point, I mean, I think, to be fair, they are increasingly being more honest about their point, is that they do not want to dilute the cultural purity of the white of a white America.
And that's being fair.
Learn the 14 words. Oh, my God.
I mean, I think that is actually a fair representation of what a lot of them say. It is. It's unfortunate. And they may not like to hear it back, but that's what the argument is.
But this is the slow march of progress for people like Van Jones. You give them all the credit for criminal justice reform, and then you mention that maybe immigrants aren't so bad.
Right. It's this and is they won't own appeasing that. Them. Right. Appeasing them is not – that's not their language. You have to beat them.
And let's also be clear about this. To the extent, and I will concede this point, there has been a lot of effort by certain conservatives, particularly in certain think tanks and some of the policy apparatus, to pursue criminal justice reform, particularly prison reform. But the idea that you would complement the people at CPAC for this is a major category error. Those people have nothing to do with it. Those people, the people who are working on criminal justice reform are not at CPAC. And he must know this, right? Like, he must know CPAC would chew up these people and spit them out. That these are movement conservative people who don't care about those issues. Like, you know, 3 years ago, the most important thing to them was the deficit and how Obama, and now they don't care about the deficit. 5 years ago, it was 6 years ago. It was marriage equality is going to bring about a complete destruction of the planet. And now they don't even talk about it because it's just not going to help them win anything. I mean, that's what's so disingenuous about what he's doing. Like, there is a place where you could go. You could go to the Nickerson Center, let's say.
Yeah, he could go sit next to Tony Blair at Niskanen
Center. You could go to the Cato Institute.
Right.
You could go to some conference of policymakers and get up on stage and say this. But he is going to the Politicon, essentially, and saying, we've got to make politics about stuff that's serious. And it's like, I'm sorry. You know, you're kidding yourself.
And I don't even think he would say a lot of this stuff on a regular CNN segment. Like, I do believe that this is kind of his both sides thinking. It's infected him. But it's like weakness of being in that room and wanting to appease them, which is what bothers me more.
Well, I mean, he knew where he was going. Right?
I know.
Like, it's not like somebody got into a cabin. They're like, we're dropping you off here, man. Good luck.
But if you're really principled, you don't really care about pissing those people off.
Right. You take that opportunity to, but even in that instance, like, I mean, I could see going there and it just being performative for me, because like that is like literally the room full of the least convincible people in the world.
If I went there, I would spend a lot of time thinking of bird analogies. I'd want a good game plan.
Somebody had a good tweet,
zoological
which was like,
imagery to.
You can't have a strong left wing and a weak right wing, because then you can't get health care for everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't know. That's obviously just business.
Oh, I get it. Wings for a bird.
What happens? What happens when one of your wings starts booing one of the other wings?
You got to take that left wing, bring it over to the right one, help it out, move it the other direction.
They move independently, so it's some sort of disorder that the bird has.
Should we hear this Ronna McDaniel one? Is that what?
Dad would not have enjoyed me talking with Van Jones.
What is this, Sarah Carr? Oh, the skit. What is this?
It's sort of like, you know, those segments.
Is this true, though? Like,
it seems like one of those
true.
Things.
It's awesome.
It seems like one of those things that local news.
I want Skittles really badly right now.
Yeah, I'll take you, Sam. Don't worry. We'll get your whole new life going.
Let's
for
let's
you,
pop
buddy.
This up and see what else that we got going.
Oh, my God. It's like a key potty.
This is Sarah Carter. Who is she?
I don't know.
Fox News contributor.
Fox News contributor. Okay.
Actually fentanyl heroin. Our kids are having parties, and they call them Skittles parties, where they bring pills and put them into bowls, and everybody just kind of picks whatever pill they want and they take them. I mean, it's kind of a shocking thing when I heard about this, just randomly taking pills, and some of these children, unbeknownst
like the
to them,
game.
Are taking
like
a Xanax that's well,
what
actually
are you take a, pill
a
you
contraband
don't take
Xanax. And they're dying immediately. There is no chance to save their life. They don't make it to the hospital.
Where's the
MS-13? It was one mistake one time, and their lives are lost.
I thought you said MS-13.
Yeah, where's the MS-13?
Well, what is her argument here? What is she?
Who
it's be
makes
afraid of
pills?
What your kids are doing.
Pharmaceutical companies.
Right, exactly.
This doesn't prove your point at all.
And who gives white kids pills? We do.
And this sounds like
the Democratic
a terrible
Party.
Time. Like, you have a bowl of pills. It could be an Adderall. You could be up for 48 hours, or it could be some fun fentanyl.
No, you pick.
They
what you
are
want.
These.
Oh. Just said that.
Oh, sorry.
Nobody's listening.
Sorry.
Gotta have both wings.
So Narcanon is writing about this here, and I'm gonna. A Skittles party could take the form of a home filled with teenagers, where everybody brings all the prescription medications they have on hand and pull them. What is the point that she's making here?
It's super. The world out there is scary, and it has to do with foreigners.
Well, it's like it's
not the companies that produce this
any
thing,
sort of pill epidemic,
not the executive she's friends with,
or opioid epidemic is the problem of bad, negligent parents, and not pharmaceutical companies. I think is the general tone. It's like those local news segments where it's like these things are under your sink, and they might kill your kids. More on that at 11.
Stunning.
That's Republican
right.
politics.
Well, let's take a
summarized.
Let's take a break. Head into the fun half. Finish up. We'll take some phone calls. Emma, are you going to be able to stay, or you going to?
I gotta run.
Okay, Emma Vigeland. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having
Great
me.
Great to have you, folks. We're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half. Reminder: this program relies on your support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop. Oh, you weren't here when I talked about Just Coffee.
You must have talked about it two times then, because I was there for one.
I visited that Just Coffee, and it was amazing.
That is cool.
Justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Today is Friday, which means that Tuesday happened this week.
Francois, who is a Haitian political analyst and former aid worker, we talked about. Actually, it was amazing. We did kind of analogous to an illicit history segment for patrons, a sort of history of modern politics in Haiti and what's happening there now and how it fits into Venezuela. And then, of course, all the other segments that we do in the main show and the post game. This Sunday, Daniel Bessner. And for patrons, patreon.com/TMBS. Also like our YouTube page and subscribe to our YouTube page, rather. We're putting up a lot more content now that we're monetized. And get your tickets April 20th, Left is Best, West Coast Fest. We're doing our second live show at the Bootleg Theater in L.A. with Big Waz, Nando Vila, and Anna Kasparian.
Oh, my See you girl. There.
Anna's great. Friend of TMBS.
Emma, what do you got going?
Bernie rally tomorrow. Did I mention that at the start?
Yes, live coverage streaming on the what is it?
Rebel
the,
HQ.
Rebel so HQ.
Facebook.com/RebelHQ. Check it out. And I'm gonna probably just be continuing to do some of my commentary videos for now. I'll be back on the road once the debates begin, likely, and once Trump starts doing some more rallies.
Oh, you're gonna go totally?
Begin, you know?
I'm hoping to do the debates. I mean, sorry.
Do you know when they begin?
The first debate begins, or the first weekend of debates is in June, and then they have another one in July.
That's
so they're starting super early.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
Jesus.
So yeah, we gotta do our planning about what we're gonna cover and stuff. But I'll be on the road soon enough.
And Matt?
Tomorrow, Wakefield by Nathaniel Hawthorne. It's a kind of interesting short story he wrote that's sort of very modern. It's about a guy who decides to leave his wife and sets up in an apartment across the street and just watches his wife respond to his absence for 20 years.
Are you thinking about it?
So, yeah.
Sam?
It's not a true story based on Sam. But Brian Cranston started in a movie about it, actually.
I actually think I remember this movie.
Wait, what was the movie called?
It was called Wakefield.
Right. It didn't do that well.
No,
but...
no. Well, it was based on an E.L. Doctorow adaptation.
Sounds like a very good Cranston vehicle.
It sounds like I'm interested in the psychology of it.
Yeah, it's very interesting psychologically for
something written in 1830s. They know you're there, and then you feel better.
It's like watching your own funeral.
I've done that. all right, folks. See you in the fun half. Jamie and I.